Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we've got some news on the charter school front. You might recall that during the 2016 election, we followed question two rather closely. That was the question that would have lifted the cap on charter schools in Massachusetts. And as we've reported in the past, that legislative push was mostly financed by a New York-based group called Families for Excellent Schools. They funneled more than $20 million into the charter expansion campaign. The last fall, the group was hit with a series of campaign finance violations from the state overseer for campaign finance. And yesterday, Families for Excellent Schools announced that it will be closing its doors. WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin broke this story, and he's with us now. Hi there, Max.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, remind us about Families for Excellent Schools. Before coming to Massachusetts, they were really making a mark in New York.
Yeah, they certainly surfaced on that political scene in a big way. They smashed lobbying records a few years ago. Big expensive enterprise, big rallies with famous musicians, and a lot of TV ads. They won over the state's governor, Andrew Cuomo, who became a real ally for charter schools and an advocate for tougher teacher evaluations. And eventually, they backed an effort to find space for charter schools in New York City, which was hostile to that sector's expansion.
Okay, so a real champion for charter schools then in New York State. But then they kind of make a play here in Massachusetts. As we found out over the past several months, they were a significant force behind the ballot question, but behind question two. Why did they come to Massachusetts first and foremost?
I think it represented a really attractive possibility. We've got some of the nation's most highly regarded charter schools here in Massachusetts. We also have one of the most powerful teachers unions. They would play the sort of adversary, and if you win here, it's a really big headline. They had a link to Massachusetts, and that's Jim Pizer, the state secretary of education, was a trustee of Families for Excellent Schools in 2014. And the issue is certainly a favorite education issue of Governor Charlie Baker, who is still really popular. Finally, it was a homecoming for the group's CEO, a young man named Jeremiah Kittredge, who was seen as this kind of whiz kid strategist down in New York. He grew up in Cambridge.
Okay, interesting. So again, remind us, we're spending a lot of time focusing on a New York-based organization, but that's because they made a big mark here in Massachusetts. So how exactly did they influence or run the campaign behind question two?
Well, in 2016, you'd go to a school committee meeting or a public hearing, and you'd see a lot of parents wearing brightly colored T-shirts, holding signs, staying on a particular message. So they were played a role organizing them. But then as Election Day approached, they also became the principal funder behind this big ad push, war over the airwaves type of thing. There was a memorable ad featuring Governor Baker that played a lot on TV.
If you like your school, question two won't affect you. But question two will change the future for thousands of kids who need your help. Please join me and vote yes on question two.
Yeah, so we remember that the governor put a lot of his political capital behind this question. But it lost by a 2-1 margin, nearly 24 points when voters went to the ballot box. $20 million later, what went wrong?
It's a good question. I'm sure people are still kicking themselves about that now. I think the no on two arguments got a lot of traction. Teachers and political leaders like Boston Mayor Marty Walsh repeated this claim that charter schools are sapping money from public schools, traditional public schools that are already struggling. I spoke to Sharonda Bossier. She co-founded Families for Excellent Schools with Jeremiah Kittredge. She left before that vote, but she says the organization might have become, in her words, addicted to winning with the same splashy methods that they used in New York. And that meant that they kind of lost focus on the hearts and minds, grassroots stuff that they promised to do.
Grassroots organizing work is relational and it's slow. And it's not as interesting or as fun or as sexy as a big television push.
Interesting. Now, of course, losing at the ballot box was really only the start of Families for Excellent Schools' troubles in Massachusetts. Later on, there came some campaign finance violations.
That's true. Yeah. Last fall, the Office of Campaign and Political Finance found specifically the advocacy arm of Families for Excellent Schools was in effect raising money as a ballot question committee, but they hadn't declared that that's what they were. So it meant that they effectively concealed the identities of their donors, which was against state campaign finance laws. They had to pay $500,000 fine. They were barred from fundraising or campaigning in the state for 4 years. And maybe most importantly, the names of those donors were published. And it turned out that about $13 million had come from just a handful of wealthy Bay Staters and groups like the Walton Foundation.
Interesting. Now, and that fine that they had to pay was the largest in state history thus far. Okay, now that brings us to where we are today. Families for Excellence schools closing down in Massachusetts and New York, right?
Yeah, the word is winding down. There was a statement published by Brian Lawrence, who's the chairman of the group's board. I don't think we know exactly why they're closing. It's a confluence of factors, clearly. But I think Brian Lawrence's statement implies that they just lost the confidence of funders. That might have to do with the fact that they were defeated in Massachusetts, or it might have to do with the fact that they revealed the identities of people who thought they were giving money in secret. And then again, their ed reform has kind of stalled in New York as well. A lot of the hope they'd put in to big expansion of charter schools down there has kind of been thwarted of late, too.
Okay, interesting. There's another wrinkle here, Max, because last week, Jeremiah Kittredge, who, as you've mentioned, is the CEO of Families for Excellence Schools, he was ousted by the board because of allegations of inappropriate behavior towards a non-employee. Did that play a part here?
I think it's safe to say that that played some part. It was alleged, it's been reported at least, that Kittredge verbally harassed a woman at a conference, and we haven't been able to substantiate that, but there seems to be some real credence to that, and obviously it was enough to push him out. Sharonda Bossier and parent organizers in the state said they kind of weren't surprised by that. Families for Excellent Schools had built what one of them called a bro culture. They're kind of jokes and machismo. These childless young kind of Brooklynites were running this campaign that was supposed to be all about families and underserved communities. Mm. So it kind of goes to that disconnect that people felt that FES was involved in here right. In the state.
You know, let's take a step back here for a second, Max. And my last question for you has to do with like why this matters today in Massachusetts, because I mean, there was a lot of attention paid to question two. And as you mentioned, rightly, the charter school movement in Massachusetts was something special. Like we looked at it as unique from other how other states had given rise to charter schools. But, you know, over time, I've spoken to many advocates here who say that they feel like their loss in question two really set back the charter school movement, as you said. So, like, what are the ramifications here?
Yeah, I think we thought of the charter school movement in Massachusetts as something that was very organic, that was basically bipartisan in its emphasis, that grew over time and produced some really wonderful high-performing schools. FES kind of represented a departure. Hey, they're bringing in a lot of money, but they, first of all, lost in the polls, and second of all, seemed to squander a lot of the goodwill. And so that people I spoke to this week sort of felt that tainted this homegrown organic movement and set it back some time. Mark Kennan worked on the campaign as the state's as the president of the state's Charter School Association, and he treats this as kind of a major setback.
The bipartisan coalition that was strongly in support of charter schools, equally Republican, equally Democrat, equally independent, had been shattered through this campaign and the tactics employed by FES.
Now, Kennan says that despite all that, he's confident that, you know, we're back to basics now, and he's hopeful that those really high-performing schools will allow charter advocates in the state to rebuild that political support, but it may take some time.
Mm. Well, Max Larkin, WBUR's Edify reporter, bringing us up to speed on the fate of Families for Excellence schools. We've got a link to his reporting at our website, radioboston.org. Max, thank you as always.
Thanks, Meghna.